I want us tonight to talk about two confessions that you must make. You think about that and you'll understand that a little bit more whenever we look at the text. But before we look at the text, I want you to go to Greek 101. I want you to understand that in English, we have three tenses: past tense, present tense, and future tense. The Greek has seven different tenses, and all of them add so much to the Scripture. And I'm hesitant about even mentioning this because my dad said, "Dan, if you preach too much about Greek, you'll convince people they cannot go to heaven if they cannot read the Greek New Testament." And I thank God for those Bible programs that you can have and have those Bible programs on your phone. I'm glad that you've got them and that some of you are using Strong's numbers to be able to understand this. And the ability to use that in the last 15 years is magnified far above what the church used to be where it was 30 years ago. Very easy to learn how to do it and just be aware of that. But I want us tonight to look at four of the Greek tenses, because the Greeks had a way of saying things, particularly in relationship to past tense, that you cannot say in English. Sometimes I've talked about Bible study being like mining gold out of the earth. And you go into it, man, you find that vein of gold. You dig down and you find that vein of gold. And man, you harvest so much gold. And you come it out and say, "Man, I got it. I've got the treasure of the Bible." And then sometimes later you go back down that same mine shaft, that same chapter, that same part of the Bible. Guess what? Dig a little bit deeper and there's more gold. In fact, you miss the mother lode the first time. You get it on the second, don't you? No, you think you do. You bring out the nuggets that you're able to get, and then you come back sometimes later and go down the third time. I want you to understand, you will never, ever get all of the golden nuggets out of one verse in the Bible. The longer you live, the deeper you study, the greater time you'll see seeing things in the Scriptures. And so that's what is happening to me as I'm listening to and reading these chapters. I'm reminded of things and what a blessing it is. Let's talk about the Greek tenses. The Greek tense is the present tense, is one that we understand. It's illustrated on the line by a series of dashes. The present tense almost always talks about continuous action. It doesn't just say, "I am," and that's what it is, but it talks about, "I am in the process of doing this. I am in the process of doing this." Very much like our English text, except in the Greek tense, the emphasis on the continuation, the ongoing aspect of everything that is involved. For example, John 3:16, "Whoever believes in Him." That's not just faith you have before you're baptized. You know, whoever believes, that's that Greek present tense, keeps on believing, should not perish, but have everlasting life. That's an illustration of the present tense in relationship to the Bible. Let's look at three Greek past tenses, and you won't really understand why this is a part of the introduction of the lesson until we get very near the end of the lesson. There is in the Greek the past tense illustrated on the screen by a single dot. And when the Greeks wanted to talk about something that had happened in the past, and they talked about it in terms of it being a one-time event, they used this tense. You know, "He went." Okay, what does that mean? It means he went. Doesn't mean he was going. There's another Greek tense to say it, but it says he went. And that's just an illustration of it. Now then, you need to understand the aorist tense does not deny that it could, that does not affirm that it was only done one time. You take that approach and you'll wind up with some conclusions that you really don't want to wind up in relationship to this. For example, The aorist tense is used when it refers to Jesus as he cleansed the temple. Aorist tense. Was that a one-time event? No. He did it at least twice in his life. And so when the Bible writes about it, it says he comes to the temple and he cleansed the temple. Nearly three years later, he comes to the temple, and what did he do? He cleansed the temple. So it does not say it only happened one time, but it affirms that it happened one time, and the emphasis is on the fact it was done one time. Now there's another Greek tense, and that is the imperfect past tense illustrated on the screen by a series of dots. It's past tense. Sometimes in our English translation, it says it's translated "he was." The King James is not as good as some of the other translations in translating this particular tense. I remember the most emphatic time of seeing this past tense and imperfect tense was used in relationship and did you read this in Matthew chapter 14 this week, that John said to Herod? John said to Herod, is that aorist? Nope. If it's aorist tense, it would say, let me tell you what happened one time when John said to Herod. John was saying to Herod, it's not lawful for you to have her. Isn't that more graphic? I remember a movie, a thing about the life of Jesus, and this is not in the scriptures, but man, how emphatically it emphasizes it, that when Herod threw John into prison, the jail room that he was in had a window, and when Herod would be going to sleep at night, John would be shouting out the window, it's not lawful for you to have her. It's not lawful for you to have her. It's not lawful. That's what the imperfect tense does. And it just goes on and on and on. And then there's another tense that is real interesting. Oftentimes, it's called the perfect tense because it combines, in a sense, two of the others. It says it happened, and the impact is as though it just happened. See if I can illustrate this. David, you mentioned it in talking about the life of Jesus. Whenever Jesus answered the temptation by saying, it is written. That's past tense. It's written, translated in the present tense. You know what he said? He says to the devil, God wrote that down, and it is just like he wrote it down right now. The impact of it is just as fresh as the time when it happened. So you've really got to keep that in mind. Now let's just take a minute and look at that text. Look in Matthew in Romans chapter 10, and that's where we'll be tonight. Romans chapter 10, verse 9 and 10, though we'll in this lesson go back to verse 5 and look at some things in verse 5. Look in Romans chapter 10, verse 9 and 10. Do you see a common word used in both verse 9 and verse 10. You see two common words that are there? I think they're highlighted on the screen. One is confessing with your mouth. The other one is believing in your heart. And so you've got two verses, and you read them, and it seems almost like it is redundant in what is being said. But we'll come back and talk about why you have verse 9, which seems to be exactly what verse 10 says. Looks like it says pretty much the same thing. Let's just put that on the shelf and understand that when you read the Bible, you need to put it in the context in which it's found. And the context of Romans chapter 10, verse 9 begins actually in verse 1 and really begins in the early chapters of Romans. But you get to verse 5. And verse 5 says, one way the Old Testament says you could be righteous is by just doing everything God says. Look what verse 5 says. Moses writes about the righteousness of the law. How could a man be righteous by the law would not even need Jesus, would not even need Christianity. How could a man be made righteous by that Old Testament law? And the verse says, Moses writes about the righteousness of the law, righteousness which is of the law, when he says, the man who does these things shall live by them. If you kept that Old Testament of law perfectly, you would not need the cross, you would not need Jesus. Sort of what we're talking about in this Sunday morning class that we're having here at this congregation, about this matter of faith. Because you see, faith provides another way of being righteous. There is the righteousness of the law which no man could have, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. But there is another way to be righteous before God, and that it is the righteousness of faith. You've got to understand that the righteousness of faith is not like the external way the Jews of the Old Testament tried to serve God. How many steps can you make on the Sabbath day? They had a law that was there. How did you wash your hands? They had laws about that. What do you do on the Sabbath day? Can you heal a man on the Sabbath day? Did you read that in Matthew chapter 14? Can you heal on the Sabbath? Can you pluck grain on the Sabbath day? They had this law so much laid out, they could tell you whether or not you could eat a chicken that had hatched on the Sabbath day. Jewish rabbis said, well, he had to, you know, well, could you eat him or not eat him? What about an egg that was laid on the Sabbath day? They had two different laws. All right to eat the egg, but that little chick inside that shell, if he pecked out of the shell on the Sabbath day, he's an unholy chicken. So you go to Walmart, or pardon me, you go to Home Depot and get some of that, the collision spray paint, and you spray that little chicken, say, I never can eat this. This is an unholy chicken because he violated the Sabbath working. That's the righteousness of faith. Let me tell you how you're righteous. The righteousness of faith speaks on this manner. I do not have to go into heaven and see Christ in heaven to believe He's there. I do not have to go to heaven and bring back Jesus to this earth in order to know that He is in heaven. I know that. You know that. It is the righteousness that comes when in your heart you embrace that truth. The Jews said, we don't need the Christ. We don't need this new covenant because we are righteous. We don't violate the Sabbath. We don't do any of this other thing. Therefore, we're righteous. And the Lord talks about the righteousness of faith. And by the way, let me just say this. Every man that's ever been saved in both Old Testament and New Testament has been saved by the righteousness of faith. Abraham believed God, and his faith, was imputed to him for righteousness, the righteousness of faith. Now, you don't have to go to heaven to see God, to know that Jesus is there, and you don't have to go into the abyss wherever Jesus went when he was crucified and bring him out of the abyss and see him in order to know that he was raised from the dead. How do you know that? By faith. And we walk by faith and not by sight. Now, we don't have time to develop the thing we talked about in the lesson this morning, and there is no such thing as blind faith. You just sort of cross your fingers and you hope it works out this way. Yeah, maybe it's right, maybe it's not right. And you just sort of pick up a rabbit's foot. Poor rabbit, didn't help him very much. He had four of them, but you've got your rabbit's foot and it's going to bring good luck to you. That's not what faith is. But it is that belief based on evidence. And we tried to talk about that in the class this morning. Who shall descend into heaven? That is to bring Christ out. But the righteousness of faith, here it is, speaks in this way. The word is near you in your mouth. I want you to hear that. The word of faith is inside of you and it's on your lips. Can you finish this verse? As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. Max, I'm going to pick on you for just a minute. You embrace something today. That is, I believe in Jesus. And your faith in Jesus right now is stronger than it's ever, ever been. Because it's in your heart. And so this word of faith comes because out of the abundance of the heart, the word of faith is not only in our mouth, it's in our heart. I am righteous. Why? Because I believe in Jesus. That's what I believe. And David, I could not help but as you were teaching those 18 things about Jesus. Think about in that first session that we had here tonight, those 18 things we embrace whenever we say, I believe Jesus is the Son of God. Where's your evidence? Well, there's evidence. If you lived in that world, you'd have seen all the miracles which he did. There is the evidence, those 332 prophecies. There is that evidence that he is the Son of God, of the impact that he's had on this earth. And every time you write down the date, you acknowledge that this is the year of the Lord. See, you need to understand that there is evidence, but it is evidence not in some intellectual thing. This is not a good way to say it, but I think you will understand it. It's not just in our head that Jesus was raised from the dead. It's in our heart. It is in our heart that we believe that Jesus was raised from the dead. Now then, look at it again. You must confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that you must be saved. Look at verse 9 and 10. If you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus, you know what the word Lord means? Sometimes it's used on a level of just like the word sir. It's like the lords in Parliament in the British culture. It's a term of respect, Lord. It's the word master used in that respect. It was also a word used in biblical times as the name of Caesar. The Caesars were called lords. There is that Lord word, the word Lord, as used to refer to pagan gods. And so whenever pagans said, I believe with all of my heart that he's the Lord, I'm going to confess Jesus as Lord. Not he, sir. Not he is Lord Caesar. Not that he is Lord Jupiter. But he is Lord God. You've got to understand that in the Old Testament, when the Jews saw the name Jehovah, they would not even read the verse and pronounced the name Jehovah. Why? It was too holy a word to say. And so when they came to that, instead of saying the word Jehovah, they'd say the word Lord, Kurios, if they were speaking Greek. But there is that fourth way that the word Lord is used. And that is the way it is applied to God. And for a Jew to confess that Jesus is Lord. For a Gentile to confess, he is not Lord Jupiter, Lord Zeus. He's not Lord Julius or Lord Claudius. He's not a headmaster, a principal of the school. He's not Sir. When a Jew said that Jesus is Lord, he could not say it without being mindful of the fact that the reason he could not say it is that he would be saying, Jesus is Jehovah. Look at the text. If you confess with your mouth Jesus as Lord, you'll be saved. If you'll believe it in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved. Look at it in verse 10. For with the heart one believes unto righteousness. Now we're going to talk about it again. But before we look at it in verse 10, go back and look at it in verse 9. In verse 9, the word believe and the word confessed are in the aorist tense. Paul writes this letter to Rome. He knew something about them. He'd never been there. Chapter 1 said, I wish I could have come, but I've never been there. Guess what he knew? He knew they had all been baptized into Christ. That's what he says in Romans chapter 6. How did he know it? Because he talked about that, you know, in Romans chapter 6. In relation, he had never been there. He just knew if they were in Christ, they'd been baptized. But he also knew something else. He knew that in their process of becoming a child of God, there was that time, that point, when they confessed they believed Jesus. I used to wonder when I was a kid growing up in church, somebody comes forward, what does the preacher say? I started preaching when I was 15, and I wasn't even sure what I was supposed to say when somebody comes forward. When somebody says, I want to be baptized, do you know what I ask them? Do you believe in Jesus? I know that's right, because that man in Acts chapter 8 who was riding along in a chariot reading the Bible, he says, here's water. Why cannot we stop this chariot? And you baptize me right this very minute. And Philip says, if you believe, we can do it. And so that's why, in a public way, when a person is baptized publicly, or in a private way, when it's just in somebody's home and we're studying the Bible with them, sometimes we wait until they get into the baptistry, and we say, do you believe with all of your heart that Jesus is the Son of God? You know what that is? That's the aorist tense. He looked back to that point in their life and says, if you confess, aorist, if there is that point in your life where you have confessed with your mouth Jesus as Lord, I want to ask you, Jesus says, if you've done it, you'll be saved. Have you done that? It's not just words. Words from heaven that says there must be that point in your life when you confess Jesus. And it's interesting, the confession. I love the way it's found in Acts chapter 8, verse 37, when Philip says, if you believe, you may. You know what the man driving, the man in the chariot says? I believe that Jesus is the Son of God. I may have said this to you because I think it is so graphic the way that they did it in Trinidad when I was there years ago. Took a person down to the ocean, to the harbor there, to where there was water to baptize somebody. And they'd be the whole church gathered together, and many of them would come together. And before the individual would baptize that person, they'd say to that individual who wanted to be baptized, why don't you tell everybody here what you believe about Jesus? And in the midst of that, they would say, I believe he's the Messiah. I believe he's the Son of God. We do it different here, but we do exactly the same thing, though it's different. Before we baptize anybody, do you believe with all of your heart that Jesus is the Son of God? And at that point, aorist tense, you affirm your faith and you verbalize it. I believe with all of my heart that Jesus is the Son of God. What about verse 10? Verse 10 begins with the word for. For, or because with the heart one believes, and with the mouth one confesses, and that confession is made unto salvation. And I don't understand how I've got the word imperfect there when it should be the word present on that screen. You know what it says? There was that point when you said, I believe that Jesus is the Son of God. And every day since then, ongoing, continually, you are professing your faith in Jesus. Think about what happened in the church whenever they left Jerusalem. Didn't have a Bible. They went everywhere and they talked to Jesus, talked to people about Jesus. They preached Christ. What did they tell them about? Let me tell you about the Messiah. And let me tell you what he's done on this earth, and let me tell you about the Christ and about how that impacts your life. And every time you make a decision, and the world cannot understand why you make that decision, It is a proclamation, I'm doing it because it's the right thing to do. Every day you meet, there are folks that are lost. And you say to them, let me tell you about Christ and about his church. Let me tell you about Christ and his mercy. Let me tell you about Christ and his desire for you to be saved. And do you not confess it when you sing? Do you not understand that there is point action when I make the confession, I believe he is the Son of God. And there is a lifetime as we ongoing present tense are confessing him as the Son of God. If you believe it, you'll be saved. For here's the way he wants you to live. Confess him every day of your life. So the question is, we asked that a moment ago, have you ever confessed Jesus? If you believe in your heart that Jesus is the Son of God, with all of your heart, and you're ready to change your life, and you may have never heard, this may be the first time you have ever heard that in your life, but the first time 3,000 people heard this message on Pentecost, that very day, not knowing anything except Jesus is the Messiah. 3,000 of them, that very day, they believed and they were baptized. And you can be baptized tonight. But before we'll baptize you, we're going to say, do you believe with all of your heart that Jesus is the Son of God? You've repented because you decided that's the way you're going to live. That's who I'm going to embrace. And then you are baptized. And then he says, having done that, are you living full of faith? If you're living full of faith, then you have the righteousness of faith. Not the righteousness of the law, but the righteousness which is of faith. And you will be saved because Revelation 2 and verse 10 says, you be full of faith until the day you die. You be faithful until the day you die, and I'll give you the crown of life. If we can help you go to heaven in any way, won't you let us know how by coming to the front right now as together we stand and sing. Will you come?